You've been there, obviously, have you?
No, we haven't. Due to my back, I've spent 4 months researching areas because I can't do much else. I'm used to being very busy working and life. And because we missed out on the trip, it just made me look into, how can we turn the misery into opportunity? Basically, and we were looking into investing in Australian real estate on the Gold Coast actually next year, and we thought the condo, be it if it is in Morioka, we were looking at a specific one. We're not expecting to make money. It's not an investment. It was purely as a holiday base and a base to give us somewhere to go to be able to have a look while in Japan for other investment opportunities.
Okay,
Yeah.
well, a few things there. First off, you're not going to be, I mean, obviously, you can rent out a condo unit long term with an actual tenant in place on a renewable lease that renews every 2 years. But since you'll need to
Sure.
be using the property, even if you do at some point want to rent it out, it's going to have to be short term, which is not possible in condominiums. It's just
Sure.
legally, unless the owner union specifically allows it and writes it in the owner union rule book, which 99.999% of them will never do.
Sure.
Potentially, you could maybe rent it out by the month if they're open to it. They can't legally prohibit it, the owner union, but they can make life very difficult for property managers. But the bottom line, specifically in those kind of rural areas, is that it's very unlikely we're going to be able to find a property manager who can do monthly rentals. There's just not enough business there for them. So,
Sure.
first off, I bear in mind that renting is probably not going to be an option in a condo unit, especially out in the I don't want to say in the sticks, but out in the more rural areas.
Yes.
And secondly, I would probably advise to at least visit a location before purchasing there, because you might find that nobody speaks any kind of English. Getting around can be challenging. The bus maybe runs. I mean, Shinkansen, yes, but the bus to get to the nearest shopping center or whatever the case may be might be running very infrequently.
Yeah.
I mean, but you're the boss. We'll help you buy whether you've seen or not, and we'll help you buy whatever you want to buy. But maybe
Yeah,
visit
sure.
first.
Yeah, definitely.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima, again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, firstly, apologies in advance for recording this on a mobile microphone setup. The quality in this intro and outro is a bit lower than usual, but hopefully still quite audible. Reason being that, as mentioned, I am currently on a much-needed holiday, but did not want to leave you without episodes to listen to. Not after the last 2 months, where I've rudely absconded on you all to deal with some family issues. So, going to be publishing some episodes for you to enjoy during this next month, regardless. But the intro and outro will be of this quality. So, apologies again. All right, so right before we get into today's episode, just a quick update. We've now got presentation topics from almost all of our amazing speakers. So I can now tell you that Emil and Alicia will be sharing 2025 and projected 2026 market updates on mortgages, property prices, and case studies for their respective fields of expertise, mainly home loans and investment loans. Anton will be sharing Akia revival stories and how these can be done using more innovative design and creativity, as will Matt, who will be speaking about another aspect of the Akia landscape, mainly about using the Akia market as the key to solving urban overpopulation and over-tourism issues. Blanca will be discussing sustainability and smart renovation projects. Tracy and her guest co-speaker, Rose Tipka, will be discussing the psychology of the short-term stay guest experience. Shu and Brett will speak about the common mistakes that people make in their house purchase journey and which key steps consistently lead to better outcomes, as well as share and analyze some of these sample deals from start to finish. Nick will be breaking down one of the most popular and contentious hot topics at this point in time, the new business manager visa criteria and requirements, and how these are likely to affect people's immigration journey, as well as what potential opportunities may still exist that would potentially suit the new 30 million yen requirements as far as business ventures are concerned. John will be speaking about how to navigate rules and regulations in Japan without breaking them as far as remote management of assets is concerned, which is what he does also well at MailMate, one of our new speakers, which you'll get to know at this summit. Daigo Sato-san will be discussing some exciting tax strategies and tax reduction strategies, and of course breaking down some case studies of his own clients as well. Chai will be talking to us about maximizing short-term rentals profitability, as well as short-term stay residential and investments and other investments in the Osaka market. Jacob from Hokkaido Hobby Homes will be talking about investment opportunities up in the snowy north, and I'll be talking about structural inspections, what they can reveal, and how those potential costs should factor into your property purchase journey. So really nice range of topics, as is always the case, and some new and returning speakers. But what really excites us, at least the organizers, is the amazing community of property enthusiasts that keeps growing every year and attends these events. I mean, you folks are the real stars. We can't really emphasize enough how happy it makes us to see you all getting together at these events, forging these new personal and business connections, supporting each other with advice and your own experiences, and how you've turned these biannual events into the best place in Japan to get together with like-minded folks who are into whatever it is you're into, really, or want to get into, whether it's investments, holiday homes, akias, short-terms, joint property ventures, you name it. There's someone in the room who's either already done it or is planning to pull the trigger on one of those ventures, and seeing you come together to support and teach each other, create new collaborations, business deals together, just generally to be a community with everything that comes along with that. Pure delight to witness for us, so we thank you all. You're the real stars of these events, and we're grateful for you. All right, so for today's episode, two back-to-back conversations. Again, the first with an Australian couple. They're looking for a condo in Morioka or nearby, and as opposed to most of our clients who are holiday home buyers, people are usually looking for a holiday home that they could maybe rent out occasionally when they're not using it. These folks are actually looking for something similar, but a little bit the opposite. They're looking for a holiday rental property. So the main focus is holiday rentals. That is, if available, going to be as well for their own personal use. So a bit of a twist there. We chat about what life is like in these rural areas for non-Japanese speakers, how to deal with potential earthquake damages, how management works and how much it costs, how could they work directly with Japanese property managers, utility companies, and third-party contractors for the purpose of management. And then we talk procedural. Should we visit before purchasing or at any stage during the purchase process? How we handle property research and find potential listings? How our services work, both on the purchase and management front? Where can bilingual, foreigner-friendly agents and other property professionals be found? How are remote viewings handled? And finally, but maybe most importantly, which properties are too cheap or too old, and what are the consequences of buying those? So here's that conversation.
Okay, so let me just scroll down through your email. Give me a second. Okay, so, oh, mid-North Coast, where about?
We're at Upper Lansdowne, so about 30 minutes from Taree, near Foster, New South Wales.
Okay, gotcha. I've lived on the Gold Coast for a long, long time.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, about a decade. Okay, and you're looking at a condo in Morioka. Oh, sorry to hear about your back. Are you okay?
Oh, yes, I'm awaiting surgery. I've spoiled everybody's Japanese holiday that we were supposed to be currently on.
I'm so sorry. So you're looking, okay, when you say open to suggestions, what do you mean? Suggestions about location?
Well, anything really. We do like Morioka. Probably just the convenience in that it is 2 hours by bullet train. Correct me if I'm wrong about any of this.
I'm ashamed to say I've never been there. Let me bring it up on the map.
No, that's fine. From Tokyo, and it's close to Sendai. So it's close to cities, but it's also got a lovely, natural beauty and lifestyle. It seems very traditional as well.
Is it a ski kind of place, or I'm not seeing any resorts in the area, right?
I don't think it's necessarily skiing. I know that it gets heavy snow, which I'm sure a lot of Japan does. And that
I
was the
don't
other
know
thing.
snow too much.
I think it was rated like number two on a visiting list of New York in 23 or something, too.
Okay. You've been there, obviously, have you?
No, we haven't. Due to my back, I've spent 4 months researching areas because I can't do much else. I'm used to being very busy working and life. And because we missed out on the trip, it just made me look into, how can we turn the misery into opportunity? Basically, and we were looking into investing in Australian real estate on the Gold Coast actually next year, and we thought the condo, be it if it is in Morioka, we were looking at a specific one. We're not expecting to make money. It's not an investment. It was purely as a holiday base and a base to give us somewhere to go to be able to have a look while in Japan for other investment opportunities.
Okay,
Yeah.
well, a few things there. First off, you're not going to be, I mean, obviously, you can rent out a condo unit long term with an actual tenant in place on a renewable lease that renews every 2 years. But since you'll need to
Sure.
be using the property, even if you do at some point want to rent it out, it's going to have to be short term, which is not possible in condominiums. It's just
Sure.
legally, unless the owner union specifically allows it and writes it in the owner union rule book, which 99.999% of them will never do.
Sure.
Potentially, you could maybe rent it out by the month if they're open to it. They can't legally prohibit it, the owner union, but they can make life very difficult for property managers. But the bottom line, specifically in those kind of rural areas, is that it's very unlikely we're going to be able to find a property manager who can do monthly rentals. There's just not enough business there for them. So,
Sure.
first off, I bear in mind that renting is not probably not going to be an option in a condo unit, especially out in the I don't want to say in the sticks, but out in the more rural areas.
Yes.
And secondly, I would probably advise to at least visit a location before purchasing there, because you might find that nobody speaks any kind of English. Getting around can be challenging. The bus maybe runs. I mean, Shinkansen, yes, but the bus to get to the nearest shopping center or whatever the case may be might be running very infrequently.
Yeah.
I mean, but you're the boss. We'll help you buy whether you've seen or not, and we'll help you buy whatever you want to buy. But maybe
Yeah,
visit
sure.
first.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that's probably the flip side, because we were looking at, possibly we, to compromise the holiday, or to substitute the holiday and the accommodation, we were looking at purchasing like a cheap property like this, like a condominium that's at that lower end, and using that as the base for our holiday, and then inspecting kind of areas after that. So
Yeah, because we were spending that amount anyway on accommodation and we were never going to see it again. Do you know what I mean? We thought that it
Well,
wasn't
I mean,
really, we
I'd be a
weren't
bit
losing anything technically.
less cautious about it if you're investing in if you're buying in a city like Sendai, a couple of hours, an hour or so south, is an actual city. There'll be facilities, but Morioka or places like that, I think are worth a visit before pulling the trigger, because you might find that as picturesque as it is, it might not be very convenient to stay.
And I was interested too in Sendai. I think the thing that pushed, and I think there's a lot of dramatization in social media about disasters and things. I think, but Morioka was a very
safe. Give me a second, we're acclimating cats here, and I need to, no, get out, get out. No. Yeah. Sorry, it's just
there. No, you're fine.
There's a new guy, and the crew are giving him a very hard time. So I'll just try to
say hello. Our son just turned 18 in January, and he got a smoky Maine Coon for his birthday. Ooh, so
really nice.
Our cats are accepting him. Well, they've had no choice because he's going to be bigger.
No such pedigrees here. These are all ugly stray cats. They're beautiful in their own way. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. You were saying?
So I said the only reason I think that we were also pushed towards Morioka was the natural. It was safe as far as natural disasters go. Sendai said it had more earthquake susceptibility, things like that. But we were open to Sendai because of the city. We did like that too. That was definitely another option of a second option of ours to Morioka.
Well, earthquakes are a concern, obviously, if you're physically there at the time. But yeah, also there's no really a guarantee of anywhere. But insurance-wise, you're covered for earthquakes. So if it's a financial thing, I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
Oh, good. No, that's good to know. Yeah, no, because and we do want to invest in, obviously, actual investment properties in the future. And we just thought, well, if we were throwing away, say, ballpark figure, 15 grand Australian on accommodation anyway, that we were never going to see again. We were supposed to be there almost the whole of April now. Yeah. We were okay to, purchase a condo and use it as our base, not only just for family holidays and not an investment for it, but to give us, a base to stay in while we look at other investments next year and following years.
Yeah, happy to assist. Just with the caveat of the more rural you get, the more I'd advise to check out the area first in person before pulling any triggers. And also, you're obviously going to be saving on the money for accommodation, but in your absence, somebody does need to, and because you don't have a Japanese address and address certificate and a Japanese phone number and a Japanese bank account, which you'll need all of the above to pay your bills. So you'll always need somebody to be managing the property in your absence.
And also,
humidity mold is a huge issue in Japan. So you want somebody coming in once a month or once every 2 months, maybe in some seasons, to open windows, doors, air the place out a bit and do some light vacuuming. Otherwise, your interior will go very quickly. So just bear in mind that there are, $1,000 or a couple of $1,000 to set up the management, and then a couple of $100 a month, aside from building fees, condo fees, which you'll have to pay regardless. But aside from that, there'll be $100 to $200 a month, depending on what level of management you need, that you need to pay someone. So just factor that into the pros and cons when you're saving money.
And so in Sendai, is it the same setup it would need, because we wouldn't be living in it? You were saying it does need somebody, due to their laws and rules, somebody in it.
It doesn't need somebody in it. But the way it works is utility companies and the tax department and the insurance company. So all of the things you need to set in place for owning a property. And the vast majority of them will not be able to onboard you as clients unless you have a Japanese address and phone number that they can contact, right? Some of them will accept foreign debit or credit cards. Some of them will not, depending on the municipality and depending on the utility company and depending on the owner union, for example, in the building management company. So case by case, but you'll definitely need some sort of representation in Japan unless you have a visa and a resident certificate and a bank account.
Okay.
So, cleaning companies as well will usually, central Tokyo, Niseko, places that are very, very rich in international property owners are a little bit different, but not the locations you're looking at. You'll definitely need a Japanese proxy to manage the property in your absence, to receive and pay the bills, to be the contact person for all of those third parties, to receive, for example, the owner union puts out a annual meeting summary. Somebody needs to vote on some of the options that they're putting in there. So you'll need somebody in place. So we're happy to provide that service. There are other companies, if it's only payment of bills and receiving posts, there's other like serviced offices. There's a good company called MailMate that can handle that for you. Our clients who usually need a bit more hands-on, like dealing with the owner union and dealing with cleaners and such, or gardeners, landscapers, in case you own a house, they usually go through us. But if it's just electronic stuff and posters, there's other companies that can do that too.
Yeah.
No, that's just good to know.
But in any case, you're talking a couple of thousand to set up, and then $100 to $200 a month. I shouldn't speak in dollars, because the Aussie dollar just took a dive a couple of days ago. But normally, between $100 to $200 a month for management. And then there's the building fee. So you've been looking at a specific listing. You must have noticed that there's monthly building fee.
Yeah, we did see that.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
So as far as that management structure and the initial like address, and you said we need a bank account, et cetera, in Japan, if we can't physically get to Japan, we can pay you to do all that part of the process. Is that correct? Or do we still need to be physically in Japan at some stage?
You don't need to be physically in Japan at any stage, except, again, my advice to check out the location before you buy there. I mean, Sendai is a city, so I'd be a bit more comfortable if you haven't visited, because, you know, it'll be comfortable living at least. But I don't know if you like the area or not. Aside from that, no, you don't need to be physically here for anything. It'll be good if you let us know when you're coming in, so that if you have an emergency, we're kind of ready to support you. But otherwise, we manage everything remotely on your behalf, whether you're here or not.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's really good, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so, too, when we go ahead and pay for your fees and that, is it 6 months, that it lasts for if we're not looking at a specific property? Do you come to us with the properties, with suggested properties, or if we have a ballpark figure, or how does that work?
So normally, you've read through the explanation of services document that Faye has forwarded. Normally, we'd be facilitating everything on your behalf. So you just need to talk to us, make bottom line decisions. And then as part of that, there's no hourly limit. As part of that, we would also include the property research. That fee would cover you for up to a year and up to 20 potential properties that we're inquiring on, and up to 10 that we're handling more seriously, like actually viewing, submitting offers on, and so forth. Which usually suffices. We never had anyone go past that. But at the moment, we're a bit swamped and stuck on some recruiting and training issues. We're just growing a bit faster than we expected. So until we sort that out, instead of that, what I've been doing for the past few months, almost a year now, and will continue to do until we sort our staffing issues, is I'll put you in touch directly with a foreigner-friendly realtor who'll be able to facilitate the purchase in English remotely on your behalf. So logistically, same as we would have done. Yeah. And realtors being realtors, they're more transaction-oriented, so they're not going to have super strategic due diligence conversations with you. Their job is to either research properties or work with listings that you provide and then make sure the transaction goes through smoothly and legally. Yeah. And so we're available. I'm available for a few hundred dollars, which is also a lot cheaper than having us do everything on your behalf, to handhold you as you work with the agent, review the building's due diligence info together, review the contract before you start, just make sure that, you know, we're not making any costly mistakes. So yeah, that we can do at any time. If you want us to do everything on your behalf, or you just have to talk to us, that'll have to wait, I hope, towards the end of this year. But I don't know. We're looking for a bookkeeper, and it's finding a bilingual one in Facebook is like finding a unicorn.
Yeah. and social media has just blown up with and Japan in general. Yeah. The last few years, hasn't it? Which would have swamped you more.
I'm not complaining. It's first world problems. But management, we can do at any time. And the consulting route, so putting you in touch with the agent that we've worked with and we vetted and we trust, and me consulting or not consulting, we're happy to just introduce you. We don't charge for that, so don't feel obliged to hire us. And that we can do at any time.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that's good. And I think, too, it was just finding someone like yourself and your company that we could trust. I think that's the main foreigner concern, isn't it? It's not always what you're spending and what you're looking at. It's just finding the initial person that you can trust that can connect us to everything.
We're happy to. That's why we exist. I mean, yeah. Japan is a very legal recourse-oriented market. Everything's got a paper trail to the moon and back. And so it's not a case like, you know, when you go to the U.S. or, I don't know, Bali or wherever people like to shop, everybody speaks English, everybody wants your money, and you kind of have to sift through them to find out what are the trustworthy ones. So here it's kind of the other way around. Everyone's professional and trustworthy to a certain degree. No one's going to run for the hills with your money, but it's more challenging to find somebody who agrees to work with you.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, that's why we're there. So half of our reason for our existence is to help facilitate the transactions and the management, and the other half is to just provide advice because it's a bit of an alien market. Make sure you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
that's great. Do you have
just probably as far as the realtor? If we're to get put in touch with the realtor that you suggest, are they in a particular area? Like, would that be in the Sendai area, or would they cover? So we could kind of look at a few various areas around Japan.
So we work with realtors in all of the major cities. The smaller the city is, the less likely we're going to be able to find somebody there who's foreigner friendly, can do documentation in English and just deal with international remittances and you know, notarized POA documents, stuff like that. So what we normally do is we send somebody in from the nearest big city. In this case, I think it'll have to be, let me look at the map again. I think it'll probably be Tokyo. Yeah, nearest big, I mean, we have agents that we work with in Sapporo, Hokkaido, but I don't think they'll go all the way down there. So it'll be somebody from Tokyo. That's not going to be affecting the cost because they don't have to go in person usually. But if you're not here and you'll want somebody to do a remote viewing of a property on your behalf, then we would need to send someone in from the biggest, nearest big city. So that would be a viewing trip from Tokyo to Sendai would probably be $200-$300. If it's all the way up to Morioka, maybe a bit more than that. There might be one more such trip involved when they're closing, signing the contract, because some of the listing agent will be more old school Japanese and maybe not be able to handle electronic signatures. So your buyer side agent might have to travel one more time to their office to sign the contract or something of that sort. So yeah, all up, it will maybe blow the purchase budget by an extra $1,000, I assume. If there's viewings, it's probably a good idea to line up a few viewings so that we're making better use of their time and your money. Because a lot of properties will fall out for various reasons, either because somebody snatched them before we got all the info, or when we look at the info, when we get the due diligence about the building's renovation history, how much they got in reserve funds, how is management being done, we might find some red flags there that will cause us to pull out of a deal.
Yes.
So because a bunch of them might fall through for various reasons, it's a good idea when we send somebody over for viewings to line up, let's say 4, 5, 6, as many as they can fit in a day.
Yeah.
Unless there's very slim pickings in that area, and then we'll just go with what we get.
Yep. And that's good. I think too, your advice, like informing us about the insurance, I wasn't aware that we were able to get insurance pretty much just as we could here. So that's really opened our location a lot more, I think, too, just feeling safe in looking at other locations too.
Yeah. So you're, are you specifically drawn towards the colder areas? Is that why you chose Morioka, or just because it looks pretty?
No, I think we liked, got a blank on the name, but because it was closer to the ocean, and then when you're obviously there was issues around tsunamis or et cetera, et cetera. You know, just the general things, we ended up trying to go to the safer, we kind of ticked the boxes for the safer
area. The safe areas. Natural disaster areas.
But we were kind of open to, you know, a broad range of areas.
Yeah, we were.
We're not really love the cold, or you know, it's just
we're very easygoing people. I think it was just to enter into the market and to give us a base to holiday as a family, not expecting any return on our money for the initial one, and just a base to be able to look at more expensive properties and other and build a property portfolio. Yeah,
and the proximity to get to Tokyo, was ideal if we were going to use it as a holiday base for the original time.
Yeah.
Because it was
only okay. Well, just bear in mind that the longer and harsher the winters are, the more you'll be paying in maintenance, because there's more heating equipment, it breaks down more frequently, you need to empty the pipes before you close the place down for the winter, and sometimes the pipes will burst. So warmer climates come with less maintenance expenses. Yeah. And again, you're covered for natural disasters insurance-wise, so obviously it's not to be there when something happens, but financially you're covered.
No, yeah. That's good.
Opens us up to having a bit of look around.
Yeah, and it has opened it up a lot. I mean, originally we looked open, and then we just got more and more focused on the one area, and probably honestly developed tunnel vision. So this chat has opened up a lot more for us.
I'd stick to at least a medium-sized city within, let's say, 45 minutes from wherever you are. Maybe an hour from wherever you're looking, because you will need those facilities, and they're not readily available in the more rural areas. Definitely not in English.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I mean, even in the cities, English is a challenge, but definitely out in the sticks. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Thank you. We appreciate it. Okay.
My pleasure. So, how are you searching for listings? Are you on AkiaMart?
Well, yeah, that being English speakers, and I have full intention on learning Japanese probably before my surgery. And being English speakers, we did find AkiaMart came up on the search, I think probably like a lot of people, and it was very easy to navigate with their mapping process and being able to put in the filter, the price range, etc.
But they only show, you got a subscription, the free version only goes up to 20,000 US, I think.
That's correct. And I think too, because we were so unsure and didn't feel secure being foreigners in putting a lot of money on our first purchase, whether we could or not, I think that's why we just left it at the AkiaMart as the free.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, a few tips for the search. Number one, I would definitely get a subscription for AkiaMart, because I wouldn't buy anything as cheap as that. And I would focus on buildings that are 30 years and younger on purchase if you can.
Yeah.
If you look at the 20,000, you'll probably be looking at older buildings in most cases. Sure. So make it 30 years and younger, because when they hit about 40 years of age is when building fees start to escalate a lot more rapidly. So if you're looking at something and it looks comfortable at $100 a month for building fees, it could double or triple once it hits about 40 years of age.
Yep.
Sure. Okay.
And I'll send you, they're sponsoring our podcast, so I've got a discount code for you. So I'll send you, I think, first 3 months discount or something like that. I'll send you that via email now. So I would definitely go... I don't know if you need to raise your budget, but look at properties that are 30 years and younger when you're doing the search.
Yeah.
And then see if that you know, if you're comfortable within that budget. If it looks like it's going to cost a little bit too much, maybe go to 35, but I wouldn't get very close to 40 years of age, because again, it'll end up costing you more in the long run. You want to buy something, if you can, you want to buy something 30 years and younger, and then as it approaches 40 years and the building fees start going up, consider reselling it and you know, recycling the money into something a bit younger again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. That's good advice.
Pleasure. So yeah, back to the drawing board, I guess, and ping us when you're ready to move forward.
Well, probably opens more doors for us now, because with the insurance, we're probably happy to spend a bit more. Yeah. And with the location, we're probably to broaden the horizons a bit and have a look more at.
And we like visiting the cold, but being Aussies, we're probably more comfortable in the warm.
I don't know. I got a lot of snowhound Aussie customers. They love the cold. Those are ski lovers.
Yeah.
That's not a thing for you, then maybe go a little bit south, I'd say.
No, we would definitely love to visit the ski locations, but probably a location a little warmer to regularly stay in would be ideal.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time with us this morning.
Oh, same here. You're lovely people. Looking forward to helping you. Let us know when you get some listings, and then we'll, if it's just a couple of conversations on reviewing listings together, then we don't charge for that. Let me know if you find any and we'll go over them.
Thank you very much.
We'll
definitely touch soon.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today. So there you have it. Interesting conversation, I thought. And this next one, which also happens to be an Australian, is a more straightforward investment property discussion. So this person is interested in purchasing in Tokyo specifically. We talk condos versus houses versus small buildings, and even about buying vacant land as a strategy. What are the pros and cons of each? We talk monthly condo fees and how much those might be, what these condos could potentially rent out for, and what yields are like. We also discuss what's a good structure age to buy at, and at what age should we resell it by, maintenance, repair costs, how frequent those costs become over time, what our investor clients focus on as far as locations and property profiles goes, and some added discussion on the complications in some more specific cities like Nagoya and Sapporo, how long is the purchase process, what's involved, and finally, how this entire process can change when you're dealing with rural properties and or elderly sellers. So really interesting conversation. Have a listen to this one as well, and I'll see you again one last time on the other side.
Yep. Okay, so Tokyo, what for how much, what are you thinking?
So I'm interested in investing probably in Tokyo because everything that I read and suggests to me that the prices are at least stable, if not going up.
Do you want me to interject with comments? Because I'll have a few every few words you say.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it. Yeah.
Tokyo has been going up in price and probably will continue to do so, but so do Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto.
Yes.
And to some lesser degree, Sapporo, Yokohama, all of those places have much higher yield and cash flow than Tokyo. Tokyo, if you get 3-4%, you're very happy. Other places can go up to 6 and a bit.
Mm. So when you're talking about yield, you're talking about like mansion, like, you know, big tall buildings with...
Whichever. It's more a case of location. With mansions, you get less of a land plot. You only get a smidgen of land that's divided between all the unit owners. But the same budget will give you a much more of a central location when you're buying a mansion as opposed to a house, because the land is what costs more, right?
Yes.
So they tend to gain in value about equally, because location and land are the only things that make a difference price-wise in Japan, not the structure.
Sure. So I think one of the reasons is sort of, you know, hopefully some value retention, but also thinking about it in future when the kids are older. We're based down in Kansai, but when the kids are older, it would be nice perhaps if we wanted to move out of the house that we live in now. Tokyo would be a good place, I think, to be because it's a place that we like and it's got lots of things going on. So thinking about, you know, beyond the investment, perhaps sometime in the future, maybe living in it or using it.
Then but I think your kids are little from memory, right? You're talking at least 15, 16 years down the track, right?
Yes. Yeah. So this would
by that time, that property will gain in value and you can sell it and buy in Tokyo if you want.
Yeah, possibly. I guess so.
But if it's central enough in a big city, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the idea of we have some property down in Osaka already. Yep. I think sort of diversifying that to somewhere else and not having anything in Tokyo. I think Tokyo seems to be quite a logical place because it's a place that we like to go to.
As long as you're okay with a lower yield, I've got no objections to Tokyo. Most of our customers are looking for higher yield, so we don't shop much around. I mean, we occasionally find a good deal on the suburb edges, but not much. Usually it's very low return.
Okay. So in terms of like a tower mansion building, sort of, you know, 70, 80 square meters or something like that, probably 60, 70 in Tokyo, somewhere in the central 23, probably not Shibuya or Shinjuku, but somewhere reasonable. What sort of a budget are you talking these days for, I don't know, something that's 10, 15 years old, something like that?
I'd say starting at around 70, 80 million, probably closer to 100.
Okay. And then what are you talking about in terms of like monthly fees for something like that? It's going to be what, 30, 40,000 a month?
Depending on the building, the newer ones cost less in maintenance and reserve funds contributions.
Yeah.
And the less pretty ones also cost less in management fees because there's not, you know, those robust gardens and bushes and all of those beautiful common areas. So I'd say somewhere between 30 to 60. It really depends on the building.
Right. Okay. And then for something like that, let's say that you're paying, I know, between 30 and 60, depending on the building, what would be the likely sort of monthly rent on somewhere like that? 200, 250, something like that?
That's a bit over my pay grade. We don't handle rentals, so I can't tell you. But I can just run the numbers that we normally get in Tokyo. So if you bought something, let's say, for, let's call it 100 million just to make it round. 100 million yen. So I'm assuming it's a good location in a relatively young building.
Yeah.
You'll be making on it something like, let's say, 3.5% a year if we're lucky. Yeah. Divided by 12, that's 291. Let's deduct what we think might be the building fees worst case, which is 60,000.
Yeah.
Plus 60,000, because that percentage is after those costs.
Sure, yeah. So 350, something like that a month.
Yeah, plus 60,000. And we also need to add We also need to add the property management fees, which are 5%. So let's make that times 1.055 plus 60,000. So on the upper end of the scale, looks like the rent will be about 350, 360.
Yeah.
And if we're going for cheaper, then probably like what you mentioned, yeah, 250 to 300 or ish.
Mm. And who's going to be your sort of your target clientele for something like that, for, you know, 350, 360? What sort of job is that person going
to
do?
Well, 60 to 70 square meters, it'll be a joint income,
yeah,
middle income kind of couple. So I'm assuming either slightly higher end middle management salaryman with a housewife, or yeah, maybe an entry level salaryman with a wife who's also working, kind of thing.
Sure.
And, you know, Japanese being comfortable in smaller apartments, potentially maybe two kids.
Yes. I mean, so that's a fairly robust dynamic in terms of, you know, there's quite a few. We're not talking about celebrities or anything like that. That's a you're talking about sort of upper middle class type, you know.
Yes, in the vast majority of cases, bigger, fancier units in better locations will definitely get you higher income tenants, but then the yield will be even lower. It's not going to be 3.5%, more like 2 and a bit.
Okay. So the more sort of upscale you go in terms of the building, you think that the yields go down in those cases?
Oh, they definitely go down, because the price to purchase goes up and the rent price goes up, but not nearly in the same sharpness, right?
I see. And when you say those sort of higher end buildings, are you talking simply the facilities and how they look, or are you talking about the age of the buildings as well?
Facilities, look, the age of the building, very much the location of the building.
Yes.
That all plays a part. But I mean, if you want to be more hands-on, you can get a lot of bang for your buck if you do them as a monthly or vacation rentals. Then
yes,
the luxury,
yeah,
then the luxury bigger units do definitely come into play.
Sure, I understand. And what about something considerably older? So something that is perhaps, I don't know, 20, 25 years into its depreciation curve, probably that would be one of the earlier tower mansions, right? In somewhere like Tokyo, one of the early ones, 20, 25
years old. Same size, 60, 70 square?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe 4% if we're lucky, I guess.
Yeah. And do you see any particular, I don't know, dangers with looking at sort of older buildings of that type?
If you buy them on 30 years and younger, and you give yourself 7-8 years to hold on to them and then consider a resale, in your case, you're maybe not considering a resale because you're thinking about the future, using it for yourself.
Yes.
But building fees will escalate more rapidly as they hit about 40 years of age.
Right.
And that's when the resale value tends to start declining more rapidly too, because if you sell them to investors, the investors are looking at the same kind of thing. Their yield is being reduced because the building fees are now higher.
Yes.
Rents haven't really gone up significantly in Japan in a long, long time. So it's not like there's anything to compensate for that.
Yes.
So I would normally, in your case, again, maybe not so much, but if it was a purely investment property, I'd consider selling it when it hits about 37, 36 years of age.
Right. Okay. And conversely, so what about buying something that is, you know, 40 years of age? What are the pros and cons of something like that, given that presumably the purchase price would be considerably lower?
Yeah, but again, building fees escalate a lot more rapidly. So if you're comfortable paying, I don't know, $300 when you purchase it, kind of put in the back of your mind that within 5, 6, 7 years' time, you might be paying $500 or $600, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mainly it. And, you know, less curb appeal means less attractive to tenants too.
Yeah, amazing.
You can refresh the interior as much as you want, but people still look at what the building looks like.
Sure. And then I suppose keeping with the theme of Tokyo, so something like a small, you know, individual house on what would presumably be a very small plot of land. What are you looking at for sort of similar budgets in central Tokyo? What is that likely to get you?
Well, rent on paper will be higher. I mean, not rent, sorry. Yield on paper will be higher because you don't have building fees to take into account.
Sure, yeah.
But you will need to constantly maintain and repair them. And again, once they hit about 35, 40 years of age, that escalates very rapidly.
Yes.
Especially more so with houses, because they're wooden structures, not concrete like the buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would put aside depending on how old it is, somewhere between $2,000 to $4,000 a year for average maintenance and repairs.
Yeah.
And also, the older it is, the more likely it is to have major structural issues. So you'll definitely want to pay for a structural inspection before you pull the trigger on any of those.
Yeah.
The 30 years and older.
Yes.
And sometimes it make, like, if it's tilting, sinking, termite tracks where the termite damage is a little bit hard to quantify, roof issues, that can all set you back, I don't know, a good 10 to 12, 15 million.
Yeah.
So it's kind of approaching the level where it makes more sense to demolish and dispose of the house, which costs about the same to rebuild a new one, about 15 million, right?
Yeah. So I was thinking, I mean, the difference at that point is that, let's say you invest, I don't know.
But you have a Tokyo land plot. That's
something. Yeah. This is the thing, right? Once you've got 70, 80 million to spend, the house is, as you say, is probably worth only 15 million. And then the rest of that is entirely in the land, right?
If it's an old house, not even that. But you just want to make sure the land is rebuildable as per current zoning regulations, because when these houses were built, zoning were regulations were a lot less strict.
Yes. Yeah.
So just make sure that you can build a new house there or anything once that does come crashing down or you demolish it.
And do you think it's much more difficult to find tenants for houses in places like Tokyo than it is for these sort of mansion buildings?
It takes longer to find tenants because you're definitely looking at a larger family size tenant.
Yeah.
But they do stay longer.
Yeah.
The downside there is more related to the fact that in between tenants, you have a larger floor plan to renovate and repair, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Actually, it's one of the things that I found with the tiny, very old properties I have in Osaka is that the rent on those is very low. The yield is very good. But the moment that anything goes wrong, you lose 3, 4, 5 months rent. Like, you know, have to replace a boiler or something like that. And
that's the case with any property you'll buy. I mean, if it's the upper, if it's a more expensive property that commands a much higher rent, then yes, it eats less into your income.
Yeah.
But then again, if it's a nicer property, bigger property, then the renovations and repairs are also going to cost more just for normal wear and tear, not talking about instances, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess also when you have a more expensive property like that, particularly if it's a mansion, you're paying the fees regardless of the management and the reserve fund. If you don't have anyone in there,
yeah,
that's just
sometimes even the water bill as well, if it's communal water meters as opposed to individual water meters.
Yeah.
Another thought is with your budget, which definitely allows for it, why not buy a small multi-unit investment building? And then if and when you want to use it, just keep one of the units or even unite two of the units on the top floor.
Yes.
For your own use.
Yeah.
That gives you kind of the best of all worlds, because you do have the big land plot and you also have multiple income streams and the flexibility to do a lot more with it. There's no owner union that you need to run things by.
Sure. But then again, like, I guess you're looking at, you know, a significantly more, a larger initial outlay in somewhere like Tokyo for that, that's going to cost you, you know, considerably more than, you know, 70, 80 million, right? For something like that.
I'm not sure. We had a client buy one of the rare cases that we do purchase in Tokyo. We had a client buy a duplex, but like a vertical duplex, like one unit on top of the other.
Yeah.
He only paid 32 million for it.
Wow.
And that was like all of our criteria. Usually we recommend 20 years and younger. It wasn't even that old.
Yeah.
But your typical, let's say, 2 to 3 floors, 4 to 12 units would probably start at around, 70 to 90.
Yeah.
Other cities, we can still get them for 50, 60.
Yeah. And you said that about sort of combining two into one. Presumably these are two separate residential addresses, at least sort of in terms of the government registers, etc. Is it quite easy to take two distinct addresses and to combine them into one?
It's not two distinct addresses. If you own the entire building, it's one title deed for the entire structure.
I see. Okay.
The layout is the layout. You do, I mean, you have to comply with the renovation regulations, but you can do with it what you want.
Right. Okay. I guess there's that. These are situations whereby it's always one person who owns the whole building. You wouldn't sell out individual parts of it to other people or anything.
The smaller aparto, yes. The big concrete condominiums are usually co-owned, but the smaller apartment blocks is usually a single owner.
Right.
But even if that wasn't the case and you do end up buying a bunch of them with separate title deeds, it's not a problem to pay a judicial scrivener to unite title deeds.
I see. Okay. All right. Interesting. You mentioned obviously that you don't have a lot of clients in Tokyo, presumably because you're based down in Fukuoka for one reason.
No. We're based in Fukuoka because we love the city. We work all over the country. The reason we don't do much in Tokyo is because yields are shitty. Our clients don't like low yields because if you think about it, most of them are expats. They're either residing overseas or they're definitely able to purchase property overseas.
Yes.
And nobody goes out of their backyard for less than 4%.
Right, I understand. So, I guess where do you find the majority of your customers, your clients are investing?
The investors, you mean, or the holiday home shoppers?
Well, so firstly, what's the split between investors and holiday home shoppers?
These days, probably about 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah. The investors focus, depending on if it's their first investment and what the risk appetite is, they'll be focused mainly on the top 7 cities, not including Tokyo in the vast majority of cases.
Yes.
And with slight caveats on Sapporo and Nagoya. Nagoya is very blue collar, so you do have a bit more tenancy issues there than you would in other cities. I mean, it's Japan, there's no ghettos and drug labs, but you still have the occasional tenant who has to cancel mid-lease because they can't afford it, or you know, Southeast Asian students who are bunking like 7 to a studio unit or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So with that caveat, and with Sapporo, because it's snow country, maintenance and vacancies cost more because people don't move much during the winter and the heating equipment costs a lot to replace.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense.
So if we aim for Sapporo and Nagoya, we aim for slightly higher yield on purchase to compensate for that.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
But otherwise, the top 7 cities, and then when they want to get adventurous, say on the edges of their portfolio after they've established, I'm not giving you more food, shut up. After they've, let's say 60 to 80% is safe and stable, depending again on the risk appetite.
Yes.
And then they'll be a bit more adventurous and buy in satellite cities, like places that are within an hour from a major metropolitan center, or prefectural capitals, like the biggest city in an otherwise rural prefecture.
Sure.
Those don't stand to gain in value as much, but they have a good tenant base and the yield is higher because they don't gain in value as much.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But again, vacancies will be a little bit longer in those places. Central major locations in big cities, we rarely have a unit stand vacant for longer than it takes to renovate it.
Yes.
In those places, you could be looking at 2 to 4 months until you find the right tenant.
Sure, that makes sense. I think mine is an interesting case, I guess, because it's somewhere that, you know, I live here already. It's somewhere that I would want to perhaps go and spend considerable amounts of time at some point in the future. So I wonder if yield, pure yield, would not be the most important criteria in that case.
Yeah, you're kind of a hybrid case. So I understand where you're coming from, but I mean, don't completely disregard the investment aspect of whatever you buy.
Sure.
Yeah.
So is it the same? I mean, we talked about the different options, things like, you know, apartment buildings and mansions and houses in Tokyo. Do you see the same thing outside of Tokyo in terms of the options? Is there something that people are particularly leaning towards in your experience?
No, kind of the same, except depending on location. In some places, it's harder to find properties of a particular type. For example, in Kyoto, it's mostly houses and townhouses.
Yes.
Not many condos and apartos there. Central Fukuoka, central Osaka, it's the opposite. It's a lot easier to find mansions and small buildings than it is to find houses that are available within someone's budget, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we might alternate between the three. We have some customers who are buying... Well, fuck off already. Whoops, I'll edit that out. We have some customers who are buying land... vacant land, either to sit on and wait for value to grow, or they have some idea that in the future they might want to build something different there.
Yeah.
But those are the more creative types. The typical 80-90% of our investors would go for mansions and apartos, not so much houses actually.
Right.
Houses are a lot more hands-on.
Yes. Yes. And is that the holiday home investors, are they happy with sort of central city mansions, or are they looking for something a little bit different in general?
They run the gamut. Some people want to be near onsen, some people want to be near ski resorts, some of them want a penthouse in the city, some of them want a house with a garden up to an hour or 45 minutes away from the city.
Yeah.
Some of them want to be where they taught English back in the 80s. Totally different people.
Mm. So like in terms of like the process, how long does it take from, I don't know, from the idea, the conceptual stage to what happens next, and how long does it take to sort of get the deal signed and sealed and delivered?
What do you mean? You bought some, you know, no? Whoops, I think I lost you.
Yeah, I lost you. So what did you say?
Yeah, I was wondering, because you already bought a few. I thought you knew that.
So I did, but I bought them through a kind of the Japanese way. Like, you know, it was go and have a look, do the paperwork, takes, you know, a couple of afternoons, and it's all done.
The paperwork is done, but the actual process and taking over the ownership and waiting for the draft contract to be ready, that all takes a good few weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're resident in Japan, I would say maybe a month and a half from the moment you submit an offer.
Okay, yeah.
If you're out of the country, maybe up to 2 months.
Yeah.
And then add 2 or 3 weeks to that if you need a structural inspection done, if it's a house.
Sure. I should clarify, the ones before, I mean, they were very, very simple, very low cost, owner change, you know, already had tenants sitting in there.
Yeah, but same documentation.
Sorry?
Same kind of documentation. I don't think it makes much of a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's vacant, you need to do a viewing as well. But
yes.
I usually measure the time from the moment we submit an offer, which is after the viewing took place, and usually just before we want to do a structural inspection in case of a house.
Yeah, yeah.
So for our non-resident clients, up to 3 months. And if you're here in Japan, probably up to 2 months.
Okay. Yeah, it's really useful. I hadn't considered the...
But I'll caveat that to say that the more rural and the more elderly the sellers are, the more it's likely to take time, because they have a very rough time remembering where they put the title deed and gathering the documents that they need to. So, and if it's an inheritance, they need to get approval from all of the family members noted in the will to sell that. So again, the more rural, the more elderly sellers, the longer it could take.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you very much. Really interesting. Especially the apartment approach, as a happy medium between, you know, full ownership of an individual house and all of the associated risks that come with that. And then the sort of the mansion where you obviously own a very small part of the land, and you're to a certain extent, you're at the at the will of the owners association and all the other people involved in that.
Correct. And the apartos are better than houses also because they are wood or steel framed wood structures, but they're built a lot sturdier than your typical family home.
Yes. The only thing I could imagine is that if you did decide to use it yourself, you are in some cases literally living on top of your tenants, right? I guess if you have
But they're Japanese tenants. It's not like they're going to come knocking on your door or throw wild parties.
Yes, that's true as well. All right. That's definitely food for thought. Thank you very much. Really interesting.
Pleasure.
I'm not sure what, if anything, I'm going to do next, but
we're here. Like I said, we're not taking on clients for full purchase facilitation now, but whenever you're ready, I'll put you in touch with a foreigner-friendly agent that we've vetted and work with. And then if you want us to, depending on what you're going to be purchasing, we can also consult you from the sidelines and hold your hand along the way.
Yeah. I think that would be the way forward. I need to look at it, some of the other considerations, especially if it's involving, you know, overseas funds and third parties, etc. first.
All right. Well, we're here. Let us know.
Cool. Nice to talk to you, as always.
Pleasure. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, another good chat. I thought at least we managed to cover a huge range of topics on this one, all the way from Tokyo to rural areas, from vacant land to entire buildings and everything in between. Kind of similar to the topics and the range of folks who know these topics who are going to be speaking and attending our summit, 4th and 5th October in Tokyo, to remind you, see what I've done there. Tickets will go live soon, by the way, which is when the early bird discounted pre-registration tickets will end as well. So if you already know you'll be attending, either in person or online via the stream, now's the time to hop over to this episode's show notes or to our website at nippontradings.com. That's Nippon with a double P and tradings with an S, nippontradings, all one word, .com. You'll see a link to register for those discounted tickets up there. Hope to see you all with us in the room or in the Zoom chat. Only about a month to go. Exciting stuff. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoshiku.